This is Jay Johnson. It is my honor and privilege to bring to you for our interview a man who is, without a doubt, one of the most renowned historian and scholars today in the United States, Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates, a man who was born in 1950 in West Virginia, went to Yale undergrad, Cambridge University for a graduate degree, has numerous honors, has written numerous books. He is also a filmmaker and the host of the PBS show Finding Your Roots. And Professor Gates has agreed to spend a few minutes with us here as part of All Things Soul with Jay Johnson on WBGO. Professor Gates, welcome to WBGO and thank you for your time. How are you feeling today?
I feel great, Jay. Thank you for having me on the show. I always knew that you were a brother, but I didn't realize that you were a genuine, literal soul brother, that you appreciate the truly great art form created in the history of our people, soul music, brother.
Okay, let's get started on that. How did you develop your ear, your taste for R&B? And I know you're an R&B fan. I have been with you when you've been playing R&B music. How did you develop your ear for R&B?
It's the music that I grew up with. As you said, I was born in 1950. And so my high school music, junior high and high school, was the music that represents the height of the soul and R&B period. We used to go to, one of my cousins was Kim Rolls. And her parents had a juke joint called Rolls Place. And I wrote to her the other day in preparation for our meeting to remind me what was on that jukebox, because that jukebox was magic for me, Jay. In fact, I would like to get it by a jukebox and replicate the music that I heard. And here's what we were listening to. I Think It's Gonna Work Out Fine by Ike and Tina.
I think it's gonna work out fine. It's gonna work out fine.
Get a Job, A Million to One, Stagger Lee, Try Me by James Brown. Blueberry Hill, I'm Walking Daddy's Home, You Send Me, remember, by Sam.
Darling, you send me, I know you send me.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love, Chain Gang, Stay.
Hey. Just a little bit longer.
Personality, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, CC Rider, Maybe, The Twist, of course. Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back.
Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back.
Sweet Lonely Teardrops, and The Great Pretender.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
That was my music. And when I think about it, I think about what I call the sepia period in our people's history, the world that we created behind the veil of race. You know, when the curtain of racism came crashing down, officially by a very conservative Supreme Court, sound familiar, with Plessy v. Ferguson, what did Black people do? A lot of people think that we just capitulated, that all we did was sit around and talk about white races. But what we did was replicate the world. As you know very well from your own family tree, we replicated the world from which we were excluded. We created Black colleges, universities, primary schools, elementary schools, our own Black churches. The three generations of dentists in my family, the National Dental Association, the National Medical Association. Why? Because Black doctors and dentists were excluded from the American Medical Association, the American Dental Association. When you ever see that word national, that codes for Black, often, or codes for Negro, as we would have said then. And I've just made a film called Making Black America Through the Grapevine. And it is my attempt to bring back that wonderful world we created within the veil, as Du Bois put it, behind the color line, the way that we expressed our agency. We refused to be crushed. We refused to allow our imaginations to be curtailed. As the tradition says in the church, we made a way out of no way. And that's the world that I'm taken back to every time I think of the classic soul music in the 60s, but also, as you know, it was a time of great transition. the classic civil rights movement, as historians call it, between Montgomery in 1955, Rosa Parks, Dr. King, up through the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 64, the Voting Rights Act of 65, and then culminating tragically, well, first with the assassination of Malcolm in February of 65, and then most devastatingly, the terrible, tragic assassination of Dr. King in 1968. But it was the period when we were fighting for our rights. We got the right to vote all over again for Black people throughout the South. And affirmative action was opening up the doors of historically white institutions like Yale, where I went to school, in ways not possible before, ways unprecedented. Class of 66 at Yale had 6 Black guys to graduate. The class that entered with me in September 69 had 96 Black men and women, including Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston, Kurt Schmoke, whom you know, the first Black mayor of Baltimore, now college president and a Rhodes Scholar. And there was a young pre-med nerdy guy. I always forget his name. Let me see. Ben Carson. We were all there at the same time. So in a way, the music takes me back to a special time of warmth and nurturing within the race, but also the time when the color curtain was being lifted and we were poised to cross over into that white world from which our parents and grandparents had been excluded. And you know that world because your grandfather was one of the two deans of the Harlem Renaissance, Charles S. Johnson, a brilliant pioneering sociologist. He was one of the first people to graduate from a historically white research university. And he was president of one of our greatest historically Black colleges and university. Right upstairs, I'm in my kitchen, where much to my wife's annoyance, I happen to work all day long. But upstairs in my study, I have this shelf of first editions. And one of my treasured possessions is an anthology called Ebony and Topaz, which was edited by your grandfather. And it was a follow-up to Alain Locke's The New Negro. And he understood that our people needed to fight racism in a variety of ways, not just by marching and protest, but by producing great literature and art. And at Opportunity Magazine, which he was the publisher of, the official organ of the Urban League, they had dinners they offered prizes for the best short stories, the best poems. And people like Langston Hughes won the prize. Zora Neale Hurston won the prize. And they would have a big ball in New York or Chicago and invite the most prominent white writers and white publishers and get these people like Langston Hughes contracts that they never would have gotten before. So that's the best of the Black tradition. And it's one of my missions is to tell the story. You know, the old hymn, I love to tell the story. I love to tell the story of Black people like your grandfather, in particular detail, the small but enormously important accomplishments that they did in order to keep hope alive, as Jesse says, in order to let us know that there would be a better time, that one day Jim Crow would fall. And they did it, and they deserve to be memorialized. They deserve to be remembered as true heroes of our people, just as surely as Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass.
Skip, you referenced a number of selections. Stagger Lee, for example. You know, the lyrics in R&B are so special. You know, Stagger Lee, he threw 7, but swore he threw 8. When Omer got his 44, shot that poor boy dead.
A lot of kids don't even know what those references are.
No, they don't.
Stagger Lee.
What are the threads that you see through R&B music that have over time resonated in our community? There are some consistent threads to a lot of music, like, you know, Baby, I Messed Up, Please Take Me Back. But what are the more socially significant threads through R&B music that you have observed and heard over the years?
Well, Jay, one of the points I've made in my scholarship over and over again is that when Black people were by themselves, what did they talk about? Now, if it was a day of a lynching or a day of a Ku Klux Klan rally or some horrible thing, of course, our ancestors, like in the barbershop, the beauty parlor, or in their living rooms, would talk about that. But by and large, we were not obsessed with talking about white people or white racism. We talked about the human condition. There was a great scholar who wrote a book, and he said, what is all literature about? He said, in the end, all literature is about two things, love and death. And if you think about soul music, love is one of the abiding, recurring themes. I want it, I want love, I need love, I had love, I lost love, and I'm trying to get love back. My baby left me and I'm gonna kill myself. Right. Or about being in love with two people and not knowing what to do, or sneaking around, or whatever, but think about
it. Mrs. Jones, for example.
Yeah, me and Mr. Jones.
Me and Mrs. Jones. Got a thing going on.
No, it affirms the true humanity of Black people that we talked about the things that every other human being was worrying about, being lonely, falling in love, keeping love, and our own mortality, worrying about living a good life. And then through the church, of course, what happens after life, you know, what happens beyond life, how to be a good person. And I think that if we hired researchers, Jay, and had them look at the whole canon of R&B and soul from whatever dates that we would decide and list the themes expressed in R&B and soul music, overwhelmingly, those themes would be about the human condition. The same things that if in 1960 or 65, we went to an Irish bar in Dublin, or we went to a pub in London, or a tea room in Moscow, the same thing people would be talking about, which is about the, you know, fighting against loneliness, being a good person, how to attract someone that we desire, how to maintain love when you fall in love. It is soul music, in other words, is an affirmation of the pure humanity, the sheer humanity of the African-American, the people, the fact that we are just like everybody else on the planet. We want a little love. We want a little warmth. We want comfort against the cold. And I value the music for that. But of course, Sam Cooke, Change Is Gonna Come. You know, that is a very political, in a subtle way.
Marvin Gaye's selections, for example.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
Oh, my God. And by the time Marvin broke out, when 71, 72, with What's Going On, that became sort of the protest album for the end of the Panther era, the rise of the Black Arts Movement, the rise
Vietnam
of
Vietnam protest era,
the Vietnam protests, the Black political consciousness that manifested itself in the conference at Gary, Indiana, the election of Black mayors, Richard Hatcher, Carl Stokes before him in Cleveland. So it was both things. I mean, we were political, but we were also spiritual at the same time.
You mentioned London. I note that among the numerous honorary degrees you have received, you recently received an honorary degree from Cambridge University in England, and you are the first Black man to ever receive an honorary degree from a centuries-old institution, Cambridge University. Professor Gates, one last question for you. What message in general would you like to share with BGO listeners. You're a renowned historian and scholar. You've seen a lot. You've done a lot. You've written a lot. What message would you like us to have?
Well, thank you, Jay. Receiving an honorary degree from my alma mater, as you said, I went to Yale, and then I got my master's and PhD degrees from the University of Cambridge. And when I got the email that I'd been selected for an honorary degree, it was literally the biggest surprise of my professional life. It never even occurred to me that that would be possible. And what I did, as soon as the shock wore off, I wrote to the vice chancellor of Cambridge, who was the equivalent of the president of Harvard, Yale, or Fisk. And I said, could you do a little research for me? Could you find out the name of the first person of African descent, because I presumed it would be an African or someone from the Caribbean, who had matriculated at Cambridge, who had successfully spent the 3 years of the undergraduate curriculum and got their BA. And it took them a little while. And they wrote back, to my amazement, it was an African-American. His name was Alexander Crummell. And anyone who's read W.E.B. Du Bois's classic work, The Souls of Black Folk, knows that he devotes a whole chapter for his regard for and admiration for this man, Alexander Crummell. And Alexander Crummell was an errand boy. He was born free. His mother was free. His father was a freed slave, lived in New York. And he was an errand boy, Jay, in the anti-slavery office in New York. And he was 14, and he overheard this conversation. Two lawyers, obviously white, had just come back from Washington, where they'd had dinner with the notorious racist John C. Calhoun. And John C. Calhoun had told him, you would never believe a Negro, he didn't say Negro, he used the N-word, was equal to a white man until he found one who was fluent in Greek, who had mastered the Greek syntax, as he said. So Alexander Crummell overheard, they didn't tell anybody. It's in 1939. 10 years later, he enrolls at Queens College at the University of Cambridge and majored in the classics in Greek and Latin in order to prove that John C. Calhoun had made a racist aspersion on Black people and that he was wrong about the nature of people of African descent, that we were as intelligent, given the opportunity, as anyone. This guy was Du Bois's hero for that reason, and is my hero. So I ponied up some money. I got my friend Roger Ferguson, whom you know, to do a match, because he was at Cambridge when I was. And then we got a lot of our friends, and we launched recently the Alexander Crummell Fund. And every year, they put up his picture, they put up a plaque with all the donors, and every year, this brother is going to be memorialized. So my message is that we have to pay it forward. What I wanted to do to express my thanks to God and to my people and our tradition was to create something in honor of somebody who came before me and to resurrect them from out of the lost pages of history and give them a prominent place at the university at which he studied and at which I studied. My message to our people is that we are great people. We come from a great tradition of people who made the most sublime cultures in the history of civilization on the African continent and in the New World. And one of the, what contributions have Americans made greater than the spirituals, gospel music, the blues, ragtime, jazz, R&B, and soul? This is American culture. These are the hallmarks of what we might think of as American civilization. Our people are culture bearers, and we can't let ourselves be beaten down by the rise of white supremacy. You know, we thought white supremacy was gone. The height of the culmination of the civil rights movement, you might say, was the election of one of the greatest presidents ever to occupy the Oval Office, Barack Hussein Obama. And that splendid family occupying the White House drove some of our fellow Americans crazy. And you could see it in the reaction, and that we have to remember that this is an aberration. We have to unite and fight the rise of white supremacy and know that a better day is going to come. The change is going to come again.
It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
I value the triumphs of the Black past in order to help to chart the future triumphs of the Black future. That is what we have to remember. We are a people. We are a great people, no matter what the system tells us, no matter how people try to beat us down. And together, collectively, if we overcame slavery, we can overcome this moment. If we overcame Jim Crow, we can overcome this moment. If we overcame the demise of Reconstruction, we can overcome the attempts to suppress the vote that are manifesting itself today. And if we overcame the horrible things that a conservative Supreme Court did, Dred Scott in 1857, Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896, then we can overcome the horrible things that this Supreme Court's doing, Roe v. Wade, and no doubt affirmative action. It's going to come, but the handwriting's on the wall. United we stand. That is the message of the Black tradition, and that is what I hope all of our people, a message that all of our people will embrace.
All right. Professor Henry Louis Gates, Harvard University. Thank you for joining All Things Soul, WBGO, Professor, and have a good weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I admire you so much. I'm an avid listener. Thank BGO for giving you the space to testify each week.
Thank you. All right.